I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome back to the eerily deserted Media Cafe here at Melbourne Park, around about an hour after the two women's singles semi-finals have been completed. Two straight sets, but competitive matches won by the defending champion Aryna Sabalenka over Coco Gauff, and the first time Grand Slam finalist Zheng Qinwen over the qualifier Diana Yastremska. Lots to talk about. Lots to look ahead to. Matt's here. Hello, Matt.
Hello. Feeling better than when I was on the podcast last night, knowing that I had about 2 hours to sleep before Fulham, although the football was a disaster.
Matt's in a the worst has happened, it can only get better from here situation.
Exactly.
David's here. Hello, David.
Hello. Yes, I joined Matt for the last 10 minutes of the Fulham debacle, and there was one fleeting moment when it looked on and the ball didn't quite squeeze under the goalkeeper's body, and Matt just sunk back into the chair and then said, I'm going back to bed.
Why do we follow sport?
Why do we do
so
it to ourselves?
So damn cruel. And I am thrilled to say that joining us, as is now tradition from any Grand Slam, I think, your friend and mine, three-time single semi-finalist here at the Australian Open and seven-time doubles champion, Pamela Howard-Shriver.
Thank you, Pamela Howard. We went with a formal introduction. First off, I just hope the Ravens don't join Fulham on the sidelines after their go at this, making the Super Bowl this Sunday.
Who have you got?
We're playing against Kansas City.
It's fortunate. Otherwise, well, no, it's not fortunate that the Bills lost, because we wanted the Bills to win, but it would have been
an uncomfortable podcast.
It would have been an uncomfortable podcast.
Pagula against Shriver didn't happen.
Roberts against Shriver didn't happen. Pam,
I can root for the Ravens.
It's very difficult to prepare your very important intros. It's quite difficult to count up the number of, on your Wikipedia page, the number of times you've won these things. You know?
Well,
but, seven is right. Right?
Yeah, and we went on seven on the trot. Isn't that how you say it? Yeah, we lost our first one, and then Martina carried me to seven in a row, and our last one we ever were able to win was here in 89.
Pam, it's a great night to have you on, because there is a lot to talk about. I think we should work chronologically here and start with the first semi-final of the night. Coco Gauff against Aryna Sabalenka, a match that certainly for the first set, and I think actually by and large throughout the match, felt remarkably to me similar to their US Open final match, just in terms of the matchup, the way they're kind of two jigsaw puzzles pieces that just fit together, and yet it was an entirely different outcome to their US Open final match. How did we find the match? What did we make of the result?
I loved it. I loved the match pretty much from start to finish. Obviously, I would have preferred a third set, just because you'd get more of it. And then you'd get the jeopardy of wondering whether Sabalenka can hold her lead, whether Coco Gauff can overturn it. And because there's so much at play between these two, I absolutely love the rivalry. I think it's one of the best combinations of a match in the sport at the moment because of the style differences between the two and because of what Coco Gauff does in terms of asking questions of Sabalenka, who was playing at a level, I think, head and shoulders above what she was producing at the US Open. I don't think that Gauff was that different to the US Open level tonight. What do you think, Pam? I mean, I really enjoyed her fighting spirit, the way she used her legs to kind of absorb and just keep getting more balls back.
Yeah, I thought Coco's second serve was really off tonight, especially in the first set. At the U.S. Open, I felt like her second serve held up a little bit better. But you're right, when there's some of those points where Coco Gauff's legs got her out of trouble and then Sabalenka made the error on maybe the seventh or eighth hit for Sabalenka, it was so reminiscent of the Open. But Sabalenka elevated, particularly midway through the second set. I was really impressed with the way Sabalenka finished.
It was quite interesting. Gauff in her press conference said she felt like she played better tonight than in the US Open final, even though she obviously won the US Open final. She said that just wasn't a good sort of high quality match. I think she was frustrated by her level in that, even though she managed to win it. She said she actually felt like she played better tonight. I completely agree with Pam. Like her serve was a bit of a liability the whole match. I think she'd hit 5 double faults in the first 3 service games and been broken twice, and I felt like that was undoing a lot of the good work that she was doing elsewhere in the matchup by using her legs, by extending the rallies. And it is just so fascinating the effect that has on Aryna Sabalenka. Like you can feel the tightness and the pressure that Sabalenka's feeling because Coco Gauff is down the other end of the court, and you almost want to tell her, chill out, Aryna. Like
You're better than you think you are.
Yeah, like, you're a great athlete yourself. Like, you can extend some of these rallies. You don't necessarily have to hit out all the time. And you've got this. Like, okay, Coco Gauff's going to get some balls back. But, like, you're an incredible ball striker. And she was timing that thing, like, incredibly well, as she has been all tournament. And I was just impressed that she kept her lid on it, Sabalenka, because started to run away from her in that first set, when she didn't take her set point. She then got broken and Gauff was serving for the first set. Gauff's forehand let her down badly in that game. But then Sabalenka played an awesome tie break, like unbelievably good. And then, as Pam said, like the acceleration from Sabalenka right at the end of that second set, she just stepped up in big moments in a way that we've seen her capitulate in Grand Slam semifinals, and we've seen her not be able to keep it together against Coco Gauff in that US Open final. And for that reason, I think this is one of Sabalenka's most impressive Grand Slam wins, I would say, because there was a lot of opportunity there for her to let it go, and she didn't. She stepped up. I was so impressed.
Likewise, Coco Gauff puts the difference in outcome down to how they respectively served today compared to in New York a few months ago. And certainly I went back and looked at the stats from the US Open compared to the stats today, and they absolutely do back it up. 8 double faults today from Gauff. She hit 5 for the whole 3 sets in the US Open final. She had 57% first serves in today. She was 66% back in New York, and Sabalenka served at 76% in today, and she was at 52% in the US Open final. And you know, all the other percentages, winning percentages on first and second serve, they all serve that narrative as well. So I don't want to go too hard on the whole technical change to the serve, because quite honestly, I haven't. It's too imperceptible for my untrained eyes, but it just goes to show how goddamn hard it is to make technical changes in the sport and how little time there is to bed that in and get it into the muscle memory such that it can stand up to scrutiny on the biggest and tensest of stages. What did you think, Pam, when Coco came out with a slightly revised Andy Roddick influenced service motion at the start of this year?
Well, certainly the power was there. There was a 125 mile an hour in my language. I think it was like 201. Oh, is that, that's right. Yours too. Not in Australia. No.
It is crazy how much tennis I've watched, and I cannot convert between kilometers per hour and miles per hour. Like, it will flash up a kilometers per hour, and I have to Google the conversion because I'm like, is that fast? I don't know.
So the power is still there, but I think it does. You're right. It does take time, even a little change. And so I think we'll know a lot more by the Indian Wells Miami swing about the serve. I was shocked, really, that she couldn't do a correction with the second serve. And that's a worry. You got to have some things you fall back on, especially with your second serve, that helps you get your rhythm back. I mean, for a while there, in the middle of the first set, she still hadn't gotten a second serve in yet.
Hmm. Is the technical change bigger on the second serve than on the first?
I don't think so.
But I think the sort of, well, my understanding of the change that she's made is that, as Pam said, she's really getting a lot of pace, and it almost feels like she's really committing to that first serve. Like, she's trying to be aggressive with it, as she spoke about in the press conference, trying to dominate with it. And the second serve seems a little bit more tentative, like she's not fully in on it, perhaps. I don't know. That's just a theory.
And maybe going on another theory is that if you do have a little change in the technique, maybe the second serve is actually more difficult, because if you don't make it, you know, you lose a point. So there's actually maybe more pressure at the beginning of a change. So again, let's sort of see how she settles in, because it's brand new.
And she did kind of hint at exactly that in her press conference as well. She was feeling stressed on the second serve today.
And it would be, right, with Sabalenka's return.
Yeah.
And that's when the technical side of any stroke is at its most important, isn't it? When you're stressed, you need to be able to rely on whatever it is. I think maybe me as a non-tennis player and coach, just watching from the outside, the serve is the part of the game I underestimate the importance of the most.
David calling himself a non-tennis player there. You do yourself a disservice, David.
Yeah, she's seen my serve. She's seen it hit the back fence at a million miles an hour.
Pam, is it... Well, maybe this depends on the player, but is it easier to make technical changes in this sport? Because that's probably what we're focusing on with Coco Gauff. Like, you know, we talk about her forehand, her serve. Or is it easier to make sort of mindset changes and adapt to big matches? Because I feel like Gauff has really sort of nailed that part of the game already as a teenager still. And I feel like Sabalenka's, you know, we saw it tonight, she was much better tonight, but she's had to really learn that. And Iga Świątek, that's sort of what we talk about with her as well. Is it like, has Gauff actually got a bit of an advantage in that she's mentally so strong already and she can make the technical changes? Or is it actually worse that she's still got more technical changes to make than sort of some of her rivals, do you think?
Well, I feel that Coco Gauff's mental strengths is becoming one of the most talked about things in the locker room, actually. There's a ton of respect what they've seen, you know, since she burst on the scenes, but especially since Wimbledon. Mm-hmm. And I know she's had changes in her team, and that's been a big help, but something's clicked. And let's face it, she seems to have that champion mentality that I observed with, say, Martina and with Chrissy. And then we saw in more recent times with Roger and Rafa, like, even the greatest are always willing to try and add some new things, tinker with things. I remember Martina was always like, and I was like, my God, you've lost two matches all year. What are you messing with anything? Or like halfway through our win streak of 109 matches, she like comes up with the idea we should change sides and I should go from the deuce side to the ad side. And I'm like, wait a second, we haven't lost in 18 months. But anyway, but she's always thinking, like, what could make her better? And I think I see a little bit of that with Coco as well.
And when a player does that, do they have to be prepared to take one step back in order to take two or three or more forwards? Is that part of it?
I think so. I think you have to have patience with any change. It's kind of interesting, we're talking about Coco now with a serve, that they haven't been willing to tinker that much with a forehand side, but they are with the serve. And That's kind of an interesting point. Like, if they're going to be tinkering with a shot during the off season, I would have thought, maybe they did do some tinkering, but nothing that they talked about. I feel like kind of with a forehand, that the less the camp talks about it, it used to be this way with like Sharapova's serve when she was having all the trouble with double faults. Her camp didn't want anybody talking about all the double faults because it would bring pressure onto the serve. But, you know, here we are. We got to talk about it.
Yeah, she was very – there was a period particularly over the summer last year prior to the US Open where Coco Gauff, in her very genial Coco Gauff-like way, bristled at questions about her forehand. I remember Mary Carrillo asked her about the forehand in the French Open pre-tournament press conference, and it's impossible to bristle at Mary Carrillo, but she definitely deflected that question. She didn't want the forehand issue to be in her mind.
Wait, did Coco show Mary her fangs at that question?
Always. The fangs are unignorable, right? I mean, it was such a fangy tennis match, wasn't it? It felt like a final in terms of atmosphere inside the stadium. The pin drop silence between points right from the first moment. It was kind of, there was a reverence, wasn't there? And it was thick with intensity, which obviously is my very favourite thing. It had that about it right the way through.
Yeah, it was goosebump stuff really in that first set, because 5-2 becoming 5-6 and then a tiebreak. I mean, you can't get better than that really in terms of ups and downs in a tennis match and both having the moments. And I feel like they both brought what they've got, and it really felt on a knife edge. And that is the ultimate really in tennis, isn't it? I mean, that's where the frustrations for me of a final being best of three. I'm almost just relieved. I'm spending most of the set thinking, thank goodness they're both bringing it at the same time, because you have so little time to get it together and feel settled. But for them, you could feel their experience. They've been there. They know how to do it. I was much more concerned for the second match in that way. They'd never done this before. But God, it's hard work, and they delivered. It was a brilliant contest.
Yeah, and I don't want to hark on this too much, because it was two straight sets, best of three matches tonight, and they were great. It was a great evening's entertainment, and that stands alone. However, I do increasingly at these Grand Slams, particularly in week two, acutely feel the injustice of women playing best of three while the men play best of five. Just how much more men's tennis there is than women's tennis, and all the inevitable consequences of that, let alone the individual impact.
Oh. The last media transport will be at 2 a.m. The last media transport will be at 2 a.m.
We'll see what we can do. TBC on whether we'll be on that.
Two straight sets matches, and here we are at 2 a.m.
Let alone the individual impact on matches and the totally different complexion it puts on players going into fantastically weighty matches, the biggest moments of their lives in lots of cases, feeling like, oh my God, if I freeze, it could all be over so quickly. If I, you know, I can lose the first set and it could, you know, it's just, bah. I just feel it more and more acutely as time goes on.
Yeah, personally, I don't have a problem with the three-set format, even in big matches. Like, I think that's a great format of tennis, but I have a massive problem with the inequality, and it's becoming such an issue. Like, you know, men's matches delaying women's matches, all the problems we've talked about all week with the schedule. A lot of that is because it's really hard to fit this many five-set matches into this tight schedule that we have at the Slams. And the fact that, as you said, in the second week, where eyeballs are on this sport, the TV time is so heavily weighted to the men because the matches are longer. And, yeah, that's my biggest issue with it, the inequality. Although I do take the point that sometimes finals can be you know, nervy, and it's difficult for a player to get started. But I tend to think that's just sport. But I do have a big problem with the inequality.
Where are you on that now, Pam?
I think back to the Cincinnati final last year that was, How long was that one? 4 hours. The Alcaraz Djokovic. To me, a 2 out of 3 set that's unbelievably competitive, that's like 2.5 to 3 hours, that's plenty of tennis for me. Now, I do think Sabalenka and Coco Gauff, especially tonight, played a very fast tempo. Now, it was indoors. It was cool. They didn't have to worry about the heat, the sun. The crowd was quiet. There wasn't as much movement at the back with the spectators coming in. And there were many times where on ESPN we were hearing, like, can somebody please hold them to their chairs, like, for 20 more seconds? Oh, wow. They were getting up a little bit early. So they were in fast mode. So it was only an hour and 40 minutes, but I felt like if that was a men's match played in the heat, 7-6, 6-4, that same match, as competitive as it was, would have been like 2 hours and 15 minutes.
Yeah. I share all of those views. Ultimately, I do like best of five set format. We've made it very clear what our sort of preference is for how a Grand Slam should be structured. But if it takes getting rid of best of five altogether to achieve equality of formats, then I'll sign up for that in a heartbeat.
The thing that you need most are the people who make the decisions to put matches on, like, especially free-to-air TV. They have to assign more fairly what people can watch, because unfortunately what I've experienced in markets outside of the U.S., I feel like in the U.S. we're pretty far ahead on this game, but they really err on the side of just default to a men's match, even when there's a great women's match on. You know, like whether it was the Iga Collins match that was unbelievable, even the 42-point tiebreak that I think the host broadcaster here showed just a couple points of on the free-to-air. That kind of thing is, like, it's 2023. Let's, like, we can't have that. And then people wonder why at the end of the tournament the women have been so under-marketed and underexposed that, of course, there's not the same interest because they haven't been on TV. They haven't had the main advertisement. So it's a cycle. Anyway, all right.
Preach, Pam. God, why can't we have Pam
on?
Pam on every day.
Pam's sipping her drink now, as she should.
Pam brought contraband to the party. Pam brought both herself and her expertise and contraband to the party today. We love Pam. So that was the first women's singles semi-final. Just wanted to touch upon the post-match interview on court conducted by Jelena Dokic. There's been a whole bit with towels and Channel 9 and Dokic throughout this tournament where the Channel 9 people ask for towels. I don't quite understand it. It's been a whole thing on Australian TV. Dokic started asking Sabalenka for one of her towels, and I think everybody thought this is just going to be, you know, another one of these moments. And then Jelena Dokic said, what I actually want to do is for you to give me one of your towels. I'll get it signed by you and we'll auction it off with the proceeds going to a charity supporting women and children who are victims of domestic violence, which is obviously a cause very close to Jelena Dokic's heart, having been a victim of exactly that, something that she's spoken about at length. And my understanding is that this was Jelena Dokic's initiative, not something kind of official by the tournament. I have no idea whether it is in any way related to the outstanding allegations against men's semi-finalist Alexander Zverev and the trial that he'll be facing in May. He denies those allegations, I should say. But it would be tremendously coincidental, I think, if it weren't related. And related or not, good on you, Jelena Dokic. It was quite a moment. It was received uproariously by the Rod Laver crowd, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a stunning ovation, and for a prolonged period. She really resonated there, and that was a moment that I won't forget.
Mm. And just while we're on receptions by the Rod Laver Arena crowd today, Yvonne Goolagong was honoured before the women's singles semi-finals. This year is 50 years since she lifted the Australian Open title for the first time. She was honoured tonight for the incredible contribution that she's made for the sport. to the sport, to her nation and her heritage. And they said the ceremony, during the ceremony, they announced that from next year, the Australian Open's annual celebration of First Nations culture during the first week of the tournament will be known as Yvonne Goolagong Cawley Day. And they will host an event called Because of Yvonne, a breakfast, followed by a ceremonial walk to Melbourne Park, with all funds raised going towards Yvonne's life's work, improving the lives of Indigenous kids through education and sport. And to celebrate that, Tennis Australia has donated $100,000 to that program. And she really we did a Tennis Relived show on Yvonne. And, I mean, this is not kind of box ticky show up in an event a couple of times a year and wave stuff that Yvonne Goolagong has been doing for this cause. This, to say her life's work, they really mean it.
Yeah, that, I think that edition of Tennis Relived is one of the ones that I'm happiest we did, because I got to learn about who she is and what she stands for and the impact she had and still continues to have. And I happened to be watching the coverage when she was told in this ceremony about this move by Tennis Australia to make this Yvonne Goolagong Day. And the look of shock on her face and surprise and happiness was really told you something. This is not somebody who takes for granted or is blasé or assumes that she's going to be honoured. She's wonderful. Do you know her, Pam?
Yeah. I was really fortunate when I started to play in 1978 as a 15 and 16-year-old that year, my rookie year. She was very much still on the tour. She hadn't yet won her second Wimbledon, which she would win in 1980 as a mom. And there wouldn't be another mom to win a major until Kleisters won the U.S. Open in 2009. And I was able to play against Yvonne in singles a couple of times, share a lot of moments with her. She lived a lot of those years when she was on the tour in the 70s and early 80s in Hilton Head Island, South Carolina, which had one of the greatest stops. It's now the Charleston stop on the tour, but it's legendary going back to the early 70s. And that was her home. And I can just remember having some fun moments at her home tournament. And then I got to Noosa one time when I was down here in Australia, which is where she's lived now for many, many years with Roger. And you're right. It's like we have champions that give back, but then you have champions that give back, and she gives back.
Makes me very happy to think of Yvonne Goolagong Cawley living in Noosa. That is one of my favourite places I've ever been.
Oh, really?
Learned to surf in Noosa.
Good work.
Back in the day. Because I was told it's a shark-free zone, and that's really what I'm looking for at Australian beaches. it meant that, obviously, Yvonne Goolagong Cawley was honoured before the first semi-final, but then she went and sat in the president's box to watch the semi-finals, and she was sat next to Billie Jean King, and I was watching the tennis, but I was also watching them chit-chat through the match and thinking, what are they saying to one another? Why can't we hear this? Someone should have mic'd them up. On to the second semi-final. Zheng Qinwen, two sets against Diana Stremska, who received quite a worrying-looking injury timeout midway through the first set. And at that point, I was thinking, oh, my God, this is going to be awkward. And actually, you know, as much as Zheng Qinwen was the better player, I was really impressed with how competitive a match this ended up being, given how bad that injury timeout looked at the time.
Yeah, it was a really interesting match, because talking about players settling, I got to watch the match with Chanda Rubin, who made a semi-final here in 1996. Great run she had then. She beat Gabriella Sabatini. She beat Arantxa Sánchez Vicario in the quarterfinals 16-14 in the third set, and then faces her idol Monica Seles in the semi-finals. And I'm kind of saying, how did you settle? And she ended up losing that match 7-5 in the third. So she settled, and she was on the brink of victory at 5-2 at one point in the third set. She was talking about, you know, you've got two big hitters here in Yastremska and Zheng. She said they had to be able to really go after the shots. They've got to hit out and accelerate through the ball, but they've got to do it down the middle a bit, you know, and not just go for lines. And that made sense a lot to me, and I felt like that's what the two players kind of did. You know, there were some errors sprayed, but this wasn't Noskova against Yastremska from yesterday. This was seemed like a pretty good quality match overall, Pam.
I thought for their first major semifinal, I thought it was actually a really high quality as well. Yastremska tends to have a reputation of just going for it, and you know, the fact she was able to win three straight qualifying matches in three sets and then beat Vondrousova, that sort of started to telecast that there was going to be a lot of upsets on the women's side again, carried all the way through to the semis. Obviously, Ukraine's story comes into play and everything they've been through. I actually super impressed. So many of the Ukrainian players have a better ranking now than they did when the war broke out 2 years ago. So it shows you a little bit about the mental strength. And just they're in full warrior mode here, literally on the tennis court. I thought it was a good performance. I think we all figured that Zhang would probably win the match, and she was a little too good. And I liked the way she ended it with a big winning serve, and you know, she held her composure. It wasn't perfect. A lot of forehands still looked a little nerve. Shonky, yes, that word of last night, Simon's word.
Yeah. And actually, to your point, Catherine, about the medical timeout, I mean, Yastremska's the one who broke first. She broke for two love, and she's hitting absolutely glorious backhands down the line. She also hits a lovely inside-out backhand from the center of the court, which was just stinging Zhang and getting her to hit long and late a lot of the time. And then we had the Zhang surge again, just like we had in the third set. Honestly, that gives me goosebumps when she finds that moment where it all comes together. She's an awesome player. Look, Yastremska's had a lot of tennis, and she got stretched out to a right with a brilliant cross-court forehand by Zhang, and then just sort of started to clutch her side. And it did go through my head, she may be hurting, but I think also she's hurting psychologically here, because suddenly she can't live with this. And I'm not saying she was cheating or it was real gamesmanship that she was intending, but I think she thought, I can't cope, I can't deal with this. This, I am hurting a bit. And she had a medical timeout, or she went off to the course. It was a 7 minute delay. They come back and Zhang did lose her timing. She managed to just about hold it on, but you know, these things, they are grey areas, aren't they? And Yastremska seemed fine after that physically in terms of being able to play the match. But Zhang was a worthy winner overall.
Yeah, I was very impressed. I felt like she absorbed a lot of Yastremska's pace pretty well tonight. There were a couple of nice slice forehands that Zhang played, actually, which was impressive.
I think that's new in her. Pam just double fist punched a slice forehand.
Slice forehand still relevant.
Do you know what, Pam? I think that's been a bit of a feature of this tournament. This is a small sample size. It might just be an anomaly in the matches I've commentated, but I have remarked upon the prevalence of slice forehands quite a lot over the last 2 weeks. I think they're making a comeback.
Would you have a different one, Pam, if you could start again?
Would I have a different
Type of forehand, or would you just stick with the slice that seems to be working so well?
I like the forehands that can both hit topspin and slice, like right. Have a variety.
Diana Yastremska is on her way to the main interview room.
It's 1 a.m. and she's on her way to the interview room.
What a stupid sport.
Matt, we derailed you.
Sorry, no.
I brought it up
and I actually forgot that we had the doyen of the slice forehand with us. And then as David said, those surges from Zhang were impressive, first set and second set. She's done that all tournament. I think it's fascinating that she hasn't faced a top 50 player to get to a slam final. Like the highest ranked player she's faced is Katie Bolter. Now,
wow.
I feel like the final might be a bit of Sabalenka doing a bit of a Taylor Fritz. Well, she hasn't seen my pace. You know? And like, actually that being true. and the thing is, like, no one's got weight of shot and just the the intent on every shot that Aryna Sabalenka has. Like, she is a one-off with that at the moment, I think. And she said, didn't she, in her press conference, Sabalenka, how much she's worked on in the off-season hitting a big shot and following it in. And she did that pretty well tonight, you know, sort of just closing the net. You know, not always with amazing volleys, but sometimes with decent drive volleys. And I just... Look, there's going to be the aspect of Kan Jeong cope in her first Grand Slam final. You know, Sabalenka's played a few of them now. But I just am fascinated to actually see Jeong's level against a player of Sabalenka's class. Because we literally haven't seen it all tournament. Like, she's done exactly what she's needed to do. But this is not only a step up, it's a few steps up in the biggest match of her life.
I do believe in Jeong's top level. I really do think it is able to compete with, maybe not, I'm not saying it can beat peak Sabalenka, but I believe it can compete with the best. I do worry about her ability to produce her top level as consistently as she'll need to, and in those circumstances. Coco Gauff was like, it was actually the last, it was kind of a bit of a throwaway moment at the end of Gauff's press conference. She was asked, at this point there was no results, Yastremska and Jeong were just getting going with their match, but she was asked, what are the secrets to beating Sabalenka, you know, what advice would you give to whoever it is that wins? And she was like, well, you just saw my attempt to beat Sabalenka, obviously I don't know. But she did say the most important thing will be, regardless of who it is, it'll be their first rodeo in a Grand Slam final. And she said, I remember my first Grand Slam final and mentally it was not pretty for me. So try and pretend that it's not your first Grand Slam final.
Although Coco Gauff's was against Iga Swiatek at Roland Garros, which is different than, even though Sabalenka is the defending champ. So they played the quarterfinals U.S. Open, Jeong and Sabalenka. I looked up the stats today, just remind me about a couple things. Sabalenka only lost 9 points on serve for the match. She won, like, it was something like in the mid-80s first serve percentage, and then won a ridiculous amount on her second serve as well. So Jeong had no idea how to, and I think Pararibo will get her much more prepared for how to return the Sabalenka serve much better. So I think that's going to be an immediate improvement. I also think since last year's U.S. Open, you think about the fall swing, Jeong played really well. Mm. She's kind of gone a level up in maturity. So I think it's going to be a competitive final. You know, obviously the wild card is the nerves, but, you know, Sabalenka, this is the match she played, the best match she's ever played. I mean, Coco Gauff in the semis was a great match that Sabalenka just played. But that final last year... was one of the greatest finals that I've ever seen.
Wow. Yeah.
You mentioned Pararibo there. That's an interesting element to all this. I was desperate for Matt to work his magic on a stat about a coach, any coach, whether any coach in history has ever won back-to-back slams with two different players. And
I'd actually tapped out of that stat because I just didn't think it was going to be possible to look that up.
It probably would have been Harry Hartman back in the day, right? Because he was the coach for the whole squad.
But basically, there isn't data on it. So it's out of reach of even Matt's powers, devastatingly. But suffice to say, look, I know Sabalenka's the favourite. It's unlikely. But what a feat. What a feat from him to do this.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's pretty recent, isn't it? And it's working. Whatever he's doing, whatever they're doing, it is working as a combo. What do you think the message will be from him to get her, or what do you think she needs to do to get comfortable out there?
Well, first off, I think Pararibo would have learned a lot, not just from observing Coco Gauff, but also from sitting alongside Brad Gilbert during that the whole summer in the U.S. summer last year, including the U.S. Open, because, of course, Brad helped coach Andy Roddick to his U.S. Open and also Andy Murray successfully. And so I think Pararibo is going to go into this final and help prepare Jeong in a way that she's never – that it's going to really help her in a big way. And listen, the other coaching camp, we got to give kudos there because they've stuck together through thick and thin. Just want to quickly remind people that, like, the worst yips of all time was just 2 years ago. Sabalenka, we have two people in the final weekend of the Australian Open, Sabalenka and Zverev, that guy, who they've had amazing renaissances on serve. And I think it goes to show that even if you have a shot, and maybe Coco Gauff can take this for the forehand, that can really just go off in a bad way, that you can recover to find a baseline that is much better than what it, you know, is at its worst.
That's reassuring, Pam, because I've had the service yips for 15 years. So
all about the ball toss for you.
What happens to your ball toss?
Last night in the ESPN studio, Chris McKendry, our host, didn't want to have her bread roll, and I tried to throw it into the trash bin that was only like 8 feet away. And I've always been able to make this. I did the worst yip. It actually went out the door and hit somebody that was walking in the hallway. Anyway, I was appalled.
If you got hit by a bread roll thrown by Pam Shriver yesterday, do let us know if that was you.
You'd have got detention at my school for missing that. There was a teacher who used to let you throw paper in a bin if you wanted to, but if you missed, you got a detention. So you used to go
What a cool guy.
Yeah, so you used to go in detention. It was like, why are you here? I missed a bin in Mr. Kershaw's maths lesson. It was just a sea of people in detention for missing that.
Did you ever go to detention for that?
I never had Mr. Kershaw for maths. So no.
He sounds like a rock star. Mm.
Everyone loved him.
Right, of course. Your school sounds a lot better than my school. We have a few more topics to cover, including getting Pam's thoughts on the men's semi-finals coming up tomorrow. But just before we dip into all of that, I need to tell you about On Location, the premium hospitality and experience provider. With whom we are proud to be sponsored. We're deep in Pam's contraband here throughout the Australian Open. As I have been telling you, On Location have ticket, hospitality, travel packages available for basically everything. The BNP Paribas Open in Indian Wells, Miami Open, the Madrid Open, Roland Garros, Wimbledon, the US Open, and the Laver Cup. And most importantly, we have a 10% discount available for Tennis Podcast listeners on 2024 Roland Garros official VIP ticket packages, courtesy of Steve Fergal's International Tennis Tours. Now, those packages include, of course, tickets to watch the tennis on Court Philippe Chatrier, as you would expect, but most importantly, access to La Mezzanine at L'Orangerie. And that's great. That's where they serve the cocktails and the hors d'oeuvres in a contemporary and refined setting.
Every night it sounds just that little bit better to me.
There's also upgrades available to the Club de Loge Lounge. And you can buy official VIP ticket packages to Roland Garros with that 10% discount code by going to tours4tennis.com/podcast. That's tours4tennis.com/podcast. And using the discount code CLAYSEASON at checkout. And a reminder that for Friends of the Tennis Podcast, there is also a 5% discount code, which is applicable to all On Location tennis events besides the Olympics. And that's exclusively for Friends of the Pod. So if you want to become a friend and access that discount code and all the other incredible benefits of being a friend, then the link to do that is in our show notes. Terms and conditions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
I'm just going to touch upon a couple of other things, notably, that happened today before we have a quick look ahead to tomorrow's matches. I think we had the best doubles match of the fortnight today. Now, I know that I haven't deep-dived on all the doubles, but we watched quite a lot of Su Wei Shea and Eliza Mertens beating Storm Hunter and Katerina Siniakova 7-5, 1-6, 6-3 to reach the women's doubles final. And the noises Matt made during this match pretty much are a match for any excited noise Matt has made this fortnight.
Can I hear some of those noises?
Oh, Shay!
Wow! Oh!
She's a genius.
He kept shouting Su Wei Shea's name.
It was the same noise as I made that when Issa Diop scored for Fulham and I woke David up.
Can confirm.
The thing is, like, she's just so casual about it. That's what I love about it. Like, she's pulled off this incredible shot, and like her partner Elise Mertens is aghast at disbelief at what she's pulled off, and Shea's just there doing a sort of little celebration like this, like, yeah, I do this all the time. Her hand skills are phenomenal. There was 2 points back to back to get the crucial break in the third set, where she came up with these winning, I think one was a winning volley, one was a winning half volley. It was just remarkable. And yeah, she's into both doubles finals, isn't she? Women's doubles and mixed doubles. It's like, she's a bit of a cheat code, I think, on the doubles court, because her hands, her disguise on all her shots is just amazing.
She reads the play, and it's so important in doubles. She just has this sense of where to go, and also just uses the geometry of the court. She is a savant, doubles savant.
She's the Adria Mannarino of the women's doubles court. We don't know who they will play in the women's doubles final, because the other semi-final was, I think, a victim of the rain today. It'll be played tomorrow. We also watched quite a lot of the men's doubles semi-final between best player in the world, Thomas Mahatch, and Zheng Jizhen, who were beaten by Rohan Bopanna, new world number one, aged 43, and Matt Ebden, 7-6 in the third. Bopanna and Ebden will play Simone Bolelli and Andrea Vavasori, who also won 7-6 in the third today.
It's been a good doubles day, isn't it?
Yeah, we really enjoyed both those matches, didn't we? It was great.
Can we
fun.
Just pause for a minute on this, a 43-year-old Bopanna being number one in the world? It's something else.
It is unreal, right? It's.
I mean, I always think about how Martina Navratilova, in her last match ever, won the U.S. Open mixed doubles alongside one of the Bryan twins. Maybe you can help me remember which one. Anyway.
Was it not alongside Leander Paes?
No, it was with that Mike was or Bob Bryan. She did win majors with Leander, who's getting into the International Tennis Hall of Fame in July alongside Vijay Amritraj. But it's crazy to have a 43-year-old at the top. But Martina won a U.S. Open doubles the month before she turned 50.
7 years to go, Rohan. The lights have just gone off.
It's all right. I trust you guys. It's all good. It's all good.
We are podcasting in the dark.
I can confirm it was Bob Bryan in 2006 at the U.S. Open. Extraordinary.
Alfie Hewitt reached the men's wheelchair singles final today. He beat Joaquin Gerrard 6-4, 6-1. He'll face Takito Oda in the finals, who beat Gordon Reid today in two very tight sets. The quad wheelchair singles final will be contested by Sam Schroeder and Guy Sasson, who is an Israeli player that I have tried to Google and find things out about, but the internet, including the Australian Open app, knows nothing about this man. But he's clearly a talent because he's also into the quad wheelchair doubles final alongside South African Donald Rampardi. They won by walkover today over the top seeds Niels Vink and Sam Schroeder. So I will keep going in my quest to find out about Guy Sasson. Top seed Dida De Groot will face second seed Yui Kamiji in the women's wheelchair singles final, and the women's wheelchair doubles was heavily rain affected today, so they're still at the semi-final stage, and those will be played tomorrow, and we'll bring you the results of that. Pam, the men's singles semi-finals, you'll be on a plane sailing back home.
Well, I'll be able to watch the first one,
okay,
all of it.
What's
and some
happen?
Of the second one. I think the Sinner Djokovic semifinal is fascinating because of what Sinner did the end of last year, beating him twice, having a tremendous finish. I think it's fascinating that Sinner did not play a tournament coming into this Australian Open. Guess what? It's played out well for him, and in many ways, I think Medvedev as well. And Djokovic has looked, at times a little bit. I don't think there's quite the aura. I don't think Djokovic walks out to the semifinal of a major against Sinner with as much of an intimidating aura as many other semifinals.
Because Sinner's got those two wins against him, or because of Novak's level generally
dropping
this tournament?
A set, what, three different times in the tournament? Just a combination of everything. And I sat next to Darren Cahill for about 4 hours tonight because we were both doing the studio during the...
This is the stuff, yeah. Bam. Mm.
And Darren said he's never been so excited and nervous for a match. He knows Yannick... form in recent months is puts him right there, but obviously doing it 3 out of 5, it's but to see Darren's excitement for this, it was just funny. It's fun to see.
It's funny, isn't it, because like the semi-final is actually where Djokovic has been the hardest to beat. He's won 22 of his last 23 Grand Slam semi-finals. The one he lost in that was that one, that really windy one over 2 days against Dominic Thiem at Roland Garros. And he's,
God, that
and he's
was
obviously
a weird match where he just packed up his stuff and left.
He just
halfway
he was
through.
Just off, wasn't he? And of course, he's never lost an Australian Open semi-final. Like, everything is on Djokovic's side there.
I don't know if Sinner knows that he's never lost. I don't know if he does.
Probably best
not
to tell him.
Hope not.
Do you think will Darren know that? Is he the
yes.
sort of guy that will know everything?
And
like
will he withhold that information?
Yes.
I've just been thinking about their matches at the end of last year, and like I know Sinner won two of them, but the final of the ATP finals was very one-sided in Djokovic's favour, and like he had the 3 match points in the Davis Cup, like he was. And the group stage one, like, it's a group stage. It's always a little bit weird, isn't it? Like, Djokovic, he was awesome in that ATP Finals final. The way he was so aggressive with his forehand, he was dominating the rallies. I think that one has maybe been a little bit forgotten in the series. Like, we're all talking about the fact that Sinner won two of them, and he did. Of course, we have to factor that in. But in the one that was sort of in the most... probably the most normal circumstances, I would say. Not a group, not a Davis Cup, just a straight final. Djokovic won it, and he won it pretty convincingly. But I can't see it being straightforward for Djokovic. I just think Sinner's in such good form. But I think I will be picking Djokovic to win, but this feels like a huge test on his hands against Sinner. In a way that we haven't really seen him have in a lot of majors recently, other than Alcaraz, I would say.
I agree with you. I look far more at the Davis Cup match than I do those two at the ATP Finals, because I was there for both those matches, and I I just don't think Djokovic in round robin, where he doesn't have to win, is the same beast as Djokovic in a final. So I really, I don't, not that that win is irrelevant, Sinner over Djokovic in the group stages. It's very relevant for Sinner. It's not that relevant for Novak Djokovic, I don't think. It was pretty one-sided in the final in the end. So I do read more into the final than I do into the group stages. But it's Djokovic at the Australian Open in a Grand Slam semi-final, isn't it?
Yeah, I remember the group stage match at the ATP Finals. You could see Djokovic hadn't got the intensity in his eyes. He was actually trying to have a hitting contest with Jannik Sinner, almost like for fun. He was just trying to see if he could do it that way, and I don't think he could really be bothered to dig in, and he lost. The final was a totally different match. The Davis Cup one is really interesting because he desperately wanted to win that. Mm. He got himself into the position to win it, and he didn't win it. So that is a really interesting development in their rivalry. I just don't see Sinner not turning up and playing really Same. Well. I think he plays well tomorrow. Whether it's enough is another matter.
Medvedev, Zverev?
Well, let's see. It's 11-7 for Medvedev. That piece of work. And... what a tournament Medvedev has had here. I mean, his second round match, Rusevori, two sets of love down, finish at 3:40 in the morning. I mean, literally, that's like flying to Europe and back in the middle of a major. It feels like you have jet lag. I called that match. I had jet lag for like days, and I didn't play. I didn't have to do the wind down or whatever. But I thought Medvedev's quarterfinal match against Hurkacz was fascinating. Like, you saw Medvedev and all of the twists and turns, and you know, was he really feeling awful there in the third, the beginning of the fourth, and then how he managed himself. He got some drink from his team that seemed to give him extra life, and I thought the tactical changes with his return serve position at the beginning, Medvedev's I'm fascinated by him. Zverev, I don't really look forward to talking about him. If I can just stick to his tennis and compartmentalize what's happening on the court. I mean, he's competed great, winning, you know, two match tiebreaks. Serving at 85% first serves in is one of the greatest serving performances to beat a major winner in Alcaraz. It was crazy, but, I mean, I think Medvedev's going to win. I think it's going to be tight.
Yeah, just on that, Medvedev's form hasn't looked great to me. And yet, we've seen several times this week, when somebody then plays somebody better, they find something else in their game. And I can't believe that Medvedev doesn't find that something tomorrow.
Just quickly on something that we touched upon last night, David, we wrapped up our discussion about Zverev with you wondering what had happened with the ATP pledging to develop a domestic violence policy. You got in touch with Simon Higson, head of corporate communications, I think, at the ATP on that matter today, and the response was thus: we are aware of the upcoming legal trial involving Alexander Zverev and will not be commenting until that process is complete. And regarding safeguarding, they pointed out that the ATP hired a director of safeguarding in 2023 to lead on new safeguarding strategy, and further updates will be communicated in due course. That director of safeguarding is Andrew Azopardi, and he was hired in February or March of last year. So it's been a while, and we continue to watch this space. I kind of want to find other things to talk about just to keep chatting to Pam, but Pam's falling asleep. They've turned the lights off.
King Wen Jing is on her
Oh my goodness. It's 1:24.
Welcome to our world, Pam. Permanent jet lag for us. Have you heard about Usher, our mascot?
Yes, I have.
Usher is lovely. Have you heard about Francis Darwin, Hyder and Soma, our respective mascots, whom we are disgracing?
Yeah, we sure
daily.
Are.
Yeah. Although we all got points today.
Did we?
Did yep. we? Even me?
Yeah.
I take it all back. Oh, Pam, have you heard about Francis Darwin, Hyder and Soma, who we are doing proud daily?
I have. I've been listening to all the way to the end of the podcast, walking down from the hotel to the courts. I've been listening to the end.
Oh, bless you.
Trying to figure out what name I can think of in tennis history to be one of the shout-outs.
Well, yes, stand you, by, Pam.
Yes. You told us one the other day that we'd missed.
Marjorie Blackwood.
That was it.
Wait, I remembered something that Matt... I'm sorry. That's an upset.
Have you heard of Billie Jean King and Alana Klos?
Yes!
They sponsor Billie Jean. We have top folks and executive producers Greg, Chris, Jamie and Jeff. And it's over to Matt for shout-outs.
We start with Fiona McGregor in Edinburgh.
Right, Fiona.
Hello, Fiona Farrow.
Yeah.
Straight in there.
Straight in there. Do you remember when we were really big on Fiona Farrow? Matt was really big on Fiona Farrow.
She's won a few matches this year. I've been monitoring. Maybe the comeback is on.
Didn't she win one of the first tournaments back or play in one of the first tournaments
Palermo.
Back after COVID?
Fiona, it's absolutely not her fault at all, but Fiona Ferrer is very associated with COVID trauma for me. Fiona, thank you very much. Like Conor McGregor, the... He does some sort of
UFC
fighting.
Oh, yes.
Don't bring him up.
What, you got any others?
Thank you. Ewan McGregor.
Thank you for
your Ewan, yay.
We've got Brian Lopez.
Hello, Brian.
Hi, Brian.
Brian Teacher.
Brian Shelton.
Bob Brian. Mike Brian.
Feliciano Lopez. Mark Lopez.
Yep.
Who may or may not be making a comeback.
Brian Godfrey.
Yes. Tell you what, Pam is elevating the shout-outs.
Brian, 126.
Brian is originally from the Dominican Republic, but is now getting his master's degree in Madrid.
Go, ooh. Brian. Good work.
Well, Feliciano Lopez is tournament director of Madrid. So that's a tie-in.
And he's got some help. I can't remember who's come in. Oh, Daniela Hantikova's come in to help
him.
Has
she?
Yeah, that's what I heard. Especially on the schedule.
All the gossip. All the gossip. Wowza. Loving it.
What else you got, Pam?
Let me think.
Fine.
Pan out, Matt. Give Pam time to think.
Yeah. I'll do it really slowly. Our final shout-out is for Mary Patkus.
Hey. Mary Carrillo, Mary Sawyer, Mary Pierce, Mary quite contrary. How does your garden grow?
Pam doesn't. We don't need anybody else. We just need Pam
do
to do the shout-out.
Mary is from Freehold, New Jersey.
Oh!
Home of Bruce Springsteen.
And Amanda Anisimova, who'd never heard of Bruce Springsteen. Mm.
And then. Chris Christie, who just bowed out of the presidential race.
Yes.
From Freehold, New Jersey.
Yes. Mary says, I won the ballot and got to attend Wimbledon and as a bonus saw Bruce in Hyde Park.
She's doing better than us then.
Which we had to pull out of that, didn't we?
We had to withdraw, injured and devastated.
I still haven't been forgiven.
Mary, what a shout out.
Yeah. That's it.
We're very big in sort of New England, aren't we? Is New Jersey New England?
No, New England. No. New Jersey would be more like the Northeast.
I mean, like, you know, the Eastern Seaboard.
That's better.
Right, yeah, there.
Nailed it.
We're big there. Right. Okay, Pam, this has been an honour and a treat, as always, not just because of the contraband, but also because of your words of wisdom.
I was afraid to bring a bigger bottle, so it was a small one.
I think it was perfectly sized. It's been a joy. Travel safely.
Thank you.
We look forward, as always, to seeing you at the next one.
David, Indian Matt. Wells, right? We'll see you
no.
in Indian. Oh, sorry.
No, not this time.
Another time.
I mean, we'll be doing podcasts. We'll just...
We'll be there in spirit.
We will be, Pam.
Can't join the queue. That's too bad.
The queue to meet us. Pam did actually join the queue last year. What a moment. What a moment. David, Matt, I'm not going to say goodbye to you because we'll be probably in this very same spot tomorrow at about 4 a.m.
Can't wait.
It's a date. We'll see you then. Thank you for listening. Good night.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.